Here it is!
From deep inside your radio.
And from New Orleans, Louisiana, where, judging by the trip here to the studio, to the Bayou Le Chaudron, about two-thirds of the trees still have their leaves. Excellent. Uh-oh. I owe Rupert money for that. Ladies and gentlemen, this is this is the final edition of the Year in Rebuke for 2013. And, you know, like the Roman god Janus, for whom next month is named, I believe, it's a time, I believe, unlike certain presidents of the United States, to look both backwards and forwards. So we'll be doing that on today's broadcast. For your listening, whatever. So first, looking forward. In news about AFPAC, this is just in from the Washington Post, a new American intelligence assessment on the Afghan war. Hey, never too late. Predicts that the gains the United States and its allies have made during the past 3 years are likely to have been significantly eroded by 2017, even if Washington leaves behind a few thousand troops and continues bankrolling the impoverished nation. This according to officials familiar with the report, the National Intelligence Estimate, which it includes input from the country's 16 intelligence agencies. Well, that's the problem. We don't have enough of those. It predicts the Taliban and other power brokers, gee, are any of them named Karzai, will become increasingly influential as the United States winds down its longest war in history. You've clocked that, right? This is our longest war in history. In our history. Not in the history of people who've had 100 years' wars. This is according to officials who have read the classified report or received briefings on its conclusions. Or conclusions on its briefings. The grim outlook is fueling a policy debate inside the Obama administration about the steps it should take over the next year as the U.S. military draws down. Like, what steps can you take? Lie? Keep the report secret? What would you do? If the intelligence report says, even if we leave troops, it's going to be bad. The report predicts that Afghanistan would likely descend into chaos quickly if Washington and Kabul don't sign a security pact that would keep an international military contingent there beyond 2014. In the absence of a continuing presence and continuing financial support, the assessment suggests the situation would deteriorate very rapidly, said one U.S. official familiar with the report. That conclusion is widely shared among U.S. officials working on Afghanistan, said the official, who was speaking for people who was among five people familiar with the report who agreed to speak on condition of don't ever mention my name or I'll kill you. Some officials have taken umbrage at the underlying pessimism in the report, arguing it does not accurately reflect how strong Afghanistan's security forces have become. I would like to offer $20 to any of those officials who'd like to wander into a rural area accompanied only by a couple of members of the Afghanistan security forces. $20 on the table right now, right here, right now. $20 American. One American official who described the National Intelligence Estimate as, quote, more dark, unquote, than past assessments of the war, said there are too many uncertainties to make an educated prediction on how the conflict will unfold between now and 2017. Chief among them, the outcome of next year's presidential election. I think what we're going to see is a recalibration of political power, territory, and that kind of thing. It's not going to be an inevitable rise of the Taliban, said one U.S. official who felt the assessment was unfairly negative. A senior administration official said the intelligence community has long underestimated Afghanistan's security forces. Well, that would seem to be a serious error, if true. Why don't you fix that? Why are they doing that? How come they're getting that wrong? An assessment that says things are going to be gloomy no matter what you do, that you're just delaying the inevitable, that's just a view, said one of the senior administration officials. I would not think it would be the determining view. What's that whistling sound I hear? U.S. intelligence analysts did not provide a detailed mapping of areas they believe are likely to become controlled by specific groups or warlords in coming years, said one of the officials. But the analysts anticipate that the central government in Kabul is all but certain to become increasingly irrelevant as it loses purchase. over parts of the country, said the official. But wait, there's more. Gets gloomier. Some have interpreted the intelligence estimate as implicit indictment of the troop surge of 2009. Senior administration officials said the surge enabled the development of a credible and increasingly proficient Afghan army. We'll see. By no means has the surge defeated the Taliban, said the official, but its shared goal was to reverse the Taliban's momentum and give the government more of an edge. I think we achieved that. Boy, is that defining success down. More of an edge. Just like a human knife sharpener, if you will. Well, for one notion of what we might be in store for as we leave Afghanistan, we might look at the new Iraq. Looking backwards. I know, not supposed to do that, but BBC News reports, in case you haven't been paying attention, and I don't know why, the media are all aflutter about it. Iraq remains in the grip of sectarian fighting, which has made this the deadliest year for civilian deaths since 2008. As if our Iraq surge never happened. Isn't that nutty? More than 8,000 people have been killed since January, many of them in fighting between Sunni and Shia Muslims. The UN has called on Iraq's political leaders to cooperate to end the bloodshed, which has escalated since an Iraqi army raid on a Sunni Arab anti-government protest camp in April 2013 killed dozens. No, it's not predictive. It's just an indicator of something, somewhere, sometime. Looking backward and looking forward, ladies and gentlemen, the new Afghanistan and the new Iraq. Now, let's look backward at the year just passed, or almost just passed, and starting with the trivial, the profoundly trivial, the final chapter, one thinks, unless he gets his own TV show next year, which is more than probable, in the career of former Congressman Anthony Weiner, who left Congress after it was revealed that he'd been texting sexual messages with pictures of his own male organ to women. He reconciled with his wife, a top aide to Hillary Clinton, and with her encouragement and with her encouraging donors in the Clinton camp, started a campaign for mayor of New York this year, in the middle of which it was learned that he hadn't stopped doing the texting, was continuing to do it under the nom de internet of Carlos Danger. Once that revelation came out, after some denials, he admitted everything, former Representative Weiner, withdrew from the mayor's race, and now awaits the call from his TV agents. A look back at that in The Year in Rebuke. Hello, welcome to the show.
He wrote out of the East one day. Lots to show, but not much to say. Every night he'd come out to play. He seemed like a friendly stranger. Said he was a members only guy. Self-esteem was skyscraper high. But soon he was hung out to dry. Bigger flop than the Lone Ranger. You think you know his name, although it's just a game. His picture needs no frame. Carlos Danger. Yes, his shots were always true as they flashed into the blue. But he wasn't meant for you, Carlos Danger. Carlos Danger. But enough was never enough for adventuring in the buff. He lived to show off his stuff, naked as a child in a manger. He did it only for sport, for the thrill of a killer retort. Only feared was the report that would be a game changer. You think you know his name, although it's just a game. His picture needs no frame. Carlos Danger. His shots were always true as they flashed up into the blue, but he wasn't meant for you, Carlos Danger. The other side of his life couldn't be cleaner. He yearned to be a burger, but he was only a wiener. His conquests he couldn't count, no peak that he wouldn't mount. Of jokes he's a perfect fount, Carlos Danger. Carlos Danger.
Well, this year we learned that NPR, you've heard of them, please give, was launching a search to replace their longtime voice who did the credits, not the credits for the people who produced or wrote the broadcast, but the credits for the people who paid for broadcasts on NPR, the donor credits. And strangely enough, the same thing was happening at a similar network, as we see here in
2013, the year in rebuke.
From CPR, Continental Public Radio, this is Up to Here. Up to Here, CPR's weekly look at the day's news. I'm Milton Getzler. For almost 10 years, all of CPR's broadcasts, from All in All to Book Bag, from As a Matter of Fact to Up to Here, have ended with credits identifying those persons and organizations whose generosity makes these programs necessary. Now, CPR is looking for a new voice to read those credit announcements, and the auditions have just begun. CPR's Ira Zipkin wandered down the hall to be a hopefully unsquashed fly on the wall.
We're rolling any time.
Can you cue me, please?
Any time. On your own cue. I'm reading.
Okay. Support for CPR comes from the Schettlinger Foundation, making dreams come true and turning truth into dreams.
That's fine, thank you.
I'm sorry, that was Schertlinger, wasn't it?
I don't know, I'm reading.
In Studio 3C of CPR's new headquarters building, a very special set of auditions is taking place. Call it the search for the voice of a network. Or I'll call it that, and you just keep listening.
What we're looking for is both evanescent and palpable.
CPR's senior executive producer, Ada Schlorman.
A voice that evokes the CPR mission and at the same time is a pain to the enduring miracle of wealth.
Rolling.
Support comes from the Tire Foundation. Without tires, you're going nowhere fast.
A little down, but excellent. Thank you.
My name's Mike Gray. I worked here about 25 years ago when CPR was just starting to gain some fundraising traction. I'd love to work on my head a little bit, and now I think I'd really love to get back into the whole public radio dimension.
Recruitment notices have flooded the internet, and applicants have come here to Studio 3C from as far away as two metro stops down. And what's remarkable, as always at CPR, is the diversity.
Rolling.
Live on CPR is made possible by the Life Insurance Institute. Life is for a living.
Excellent. And tell us your name once again.
I'm Tom Brokaw, Jr.
Wonderful, thank you.
It's so difficult to put your finger on anything, let alone what we're looking for here. It's some intangible sense of what it means to be proud of not needing the money, and at the same time, grateful for actually getting it.
CPR's goal is to have all the funding credits across all its programs spoken in one consistent voice. But some CPR hosts weren't thrilled with that decision.
Well, of course I'd gotten used to doing the credits on my programs, including this one.
All in All host Milton Getzler.
So it was hard for me for the first few weeks not to take this move personally, but then I realized it adds to my credibility not to have to mention all those foundations and corporations. And besides, it means I get out of the studio 20 seconds earlier every day, so I think it's going to work out.
And rolling?
Support for CPR comes from pork. So much more than pig meat.
That's wonderful. Thank you, honey.
Ada Schlorman hopes to have the process narrowed down to 20 semifinalists sometime during the third fiscal quarter of next year. I'm Ira Zitkin, down the hall in Studio 3C.
Can I stop rolling now?
And for now, you're up to here. Maybe for the last time, let me say we had help today from the Sandler Foundation, making a difference by being different. Join us next time for another deep dive into the weeds on Up to Here. I'm Milton Getzler in Washington. This is CPR, Continental Public Radio.
And this is your local public CPR station, I should say. Ladies and gentlemen, let's get to some of the more serious things that went on in 2013. Many of them involved, in one way or another, the issue of secrecy. There are reports as recently as this week on the role that, on the depth and the breadth of private data brokerage, the business that private firms are in of gathering, aggregating, and selling the data that you and I willingly give to your Googles, your Facebooks, your Twitters, your PayPals every day in the course of using the internet. And certainly that's a topic for concern. It can get you in some trouble. It can't get you in jail or get you killed. And that takes us to the other kind of secrecy that's been a big topic this year, the role of the U.S. government in surveilling, following, gathering data, collecting data on its citizens. The precursor to the big news of the year was in March of 2013, when Director of National Intelligence, or as I call him, the DNI, James Clapper. I said James Clapper.
Clap on, clap off, the clapper.
That's the good one. Testified before, under oath, I should say, before a committee of the Congress, and when asked a direct question as to whether the NSA was gathering phone or internet data on millions of Americans, pretty much said, not that I'm aware of, not wittingly. In the days and weeks to come, it turned out that was not a truthful answer. And James Clapper defended himself by saying, well, it was a difficult question because it involved classified material. And therefore, I gave the least untruthful answer. I gave the least untruthful answer. Now, of course, if you compare that to what his oath required him to say, believe it's the truth, whole truth, and nothing but the truth. That wasn't true to his oath. So it may not have been, Oliver North got prosecuted for lying to Congress. And look at him. So though it might not have been faithful to his oath, that phrase was inspiring to our own Dewey Gordon. Former lead singer of Boys R Us.
You don't have to lie to me. Don't have to tell the truth. All I want to hear is what you're saying. 'Cause when I stop believing, it's like when I lose a tooth. And hoping that it's so, it's just like praying. So speak with lots of fibers of your being. Fight disbelief, it's another form of cancer. To know from you is more than I can know. It's only that my ignorance is showing. So when I ask you questions, don't let it bring you down. It only means I'm staying instead of going. Just like a dancer. Don't need a stack of Bibles. Don't even need to swear on one. Just give me your least untruthful answer. Give me your least untruthful answer. My faith in you, it can't be tarnished. The truth looks better when it's varnished. When it's varnished. So speak with lots of fibers of you. Another form of cancer. Let me know there aren't that many shadows of a doubt. Please give me your least untruthful answer. Give me your least untruthful.
On the subject of Afghanistan, the Washington Post, I believe, reported this year that as the United States planned for staying around, there was the question of all the military equipment that had been sent over there. And it turned out the Pentagon was planning not to bring much of it or most of it back, which led to the question, what were they going to do with it?
2013. The year in rebuke.
The Army says it's all gotta go. The Afghans say it can't leave. And I say, saving bucks starts here. Hi, I'm B-Rock, with the greatest money-saving deals since the Indian sold Manhattan. Ever wanted to own a partially armored Humvee of your very own? And ever wondered how you could do it without paying Pentagon prices? The answer is as close as B-Rock's Afghan Closeout Blowout. And not just vehicles. This event is putting on sale for the first time and for the last time until the next time. The biggest sale of military and outdoor gear since Custer said uncle. How about your own war room? Thousands of square feet for you to strategize your next big move, or just to watch the big game in hyper-secure comfort. The price? Too low to mention on the air. Too low to mention even on an encrypted phone line. But time's running short, and we've got to move an entire war's worth of gear. Our loss is your gain. Although, since we're you, it's your loss, too. It's all here waiting for you. State-of-the-art communications equipment, barracks-grade cooking supplies, enough uniforms to supply an invading force of your own, anti-insurgent spray, Afghan English e-dictionaries. All you do is charge it, and then you pick it up and pocket the savings. Now, if the U.S. government transported this stuff back home, it might cost double or triple what you'll pay at B-Rock's Afghan Closeout Blowout. And your credit? We've already got your credit report on our health insurance computer, so you're ready to rock and roll. The B-Rock way. But don't take my word for it. Listen to this general who works for me.
Whether you're looking for camo or ammo, fixed wing or rotor, the only thing better than our guarantee would be a certificate of victory. Heck, I'd love to buy some of this gear for myself, but the Afghans won't let me. They're crazy.
And you don't have to go to some showroom or warehouse. It's all online at BRock.gov. Every night scope, every canteen, every up-armored bribe bag. The ones Army scientists developed for paying off warlords. It's like a strong box in a sack. And they're not just at rock-bottom prices. They're at B-Rock-bottom prices. But these savings won't last forever. Eventually, the sun's gonna die. So log on, click through, and agree to the terms of use without reading them. B-Rock's Afghan Closeout Blowout. The best way to wind down a weekend and a war.
The former Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton, was in the news a lot this year, even though she was out of government. She was named by Bill Clinton, or by people associated with Bill Clinton, to be the co-chairman of the Clinton Global Initiative. And I believe Chelsea was also recruited. So it's now really a family foundation, ladies and gentlemen. And of course, controversy continued right up through today with that New York Times piece on the front page about how the State Department reacted to and responded to the attack on the U.S. legation in Benghazi, Libya on September 11th, 2012, which resulted in four Americans, including the American ambassador, being killed. So there was plenty meat for Clinton something.
Clinton something. The wilderness years.
Anyway, long story short, Hillary, I'm getting major pushback on the idea of a face-to-face with you and Mr. President Obama.
I don't understand, James. I never had a problem getting a face-to-face with him before.
That's when you were Secretary of State. You were in his cabinet.
You know damn well Bill never saw half the people in his cabinet.
Well, I'm just telling you what I'm running into. The messaging from the Oval is that you can deal with the Benghazi messaging at a lower, more messaging-centric level.
I'm getting the messaging. But damn it, you'd think these people wouldn't want to let the putative 2016 nominee be hung out to dry like this.
You might think that. And in fact, they're not letting Joe Biden hang out to dry.
James, I know you haven't committed yet, but if you think Biden's got a snowball's chance, you should be committed.
Just saying. Look what they did with Susan Rice. Gave her the talking points, put her on every TV show on Sunday that doesn't have football on it, and then they dropped her like a burnt yam when their talking points turned out to be duck poop. And she was their gal. You, on the other hand,
am my gal. I'm very aware of that. Look, I'm not asking them to protect me. I'm a grown-up. I just think we have to work together on this. So look, State Department was decorative shrubbery for CIA in Benghazi.
Mm-hmm.
When the thing goes bluey, somehow they blame the shrubbery. I mean, CIA is paid to take the heat. Look what George Bush hung on them.
Everything but Dick Cheney's jock. And look what CIA did afterward. Leaked against him like a catahoula blue with kidney stones. You know, I'd love to help you out and pull some highly placed strings over there. But the most highly placed string we had over there was you. And you unstrung yourself.
What about Kerry?
Oh, he'll fight for the department, as it's currently constituted, under him.
And not for his distinguished predecessor, the one who
sat on the butt all during his presidential campaign.
Oh, come on, James. I did some work for him in some key states.
Look, best thing you can do is what you're doing. Getting your butt into Bill's foundation and covering yourself with all that do-gooder fairy dust. A few months of that, and some nice high-priced non-political speeches. Benghazi's gonna be an issue to nobody but the crazy-ass Republican base and my wife.
Well, I think the only reason Bill put me on the foundation is he's afraid he might be running out of his own fairy dust.
Really?
Yeah. Big meeting at his office. Right now.
I'm just saying, Here's David Petraeus, nice little private equity gig.
Mm-hmm.
Head of MI5, nice little international bank gig.
Mm-hmm.
What do we got on the books this month for me? A commencement speech at Howard University and a public service announcement where I co-star with Smokey the Damn Bear.
Mr. President, obviously there are cycles in this business. Right now we're not enjoying one of our particularly up cycles, but that doesn't necessarily have any predictive power about what the second half of the year may have in store.
Damn, man, you're blowing smoke up an old smoke blower's behind. David Petraeus. He loses his CIA job by having an affair with his biographer, and he's advising an investment firm? Let me tell you something, Adrian.
Mm-hmm.
I know more CEOs on a first-name basis that David Petraeus has ever even heard of.
Well, I'm sure that's true, Mr. President, and it's a point I make in my presentations. In fact, it's top half of the seventh slide.
MI5? That's nothing but the FBI's AAA team. And a major international bank with serious reputational difficulties thinks he's going to do a better job at imparting a distinguished celebrity halo effect than I can. Man, that's eight kinds of jive.
Sir, there obviously are still plenty of opportunities that both meet our price point and are appropriate. And, of course, there's still the $1 million standing offer for you to go on QVC.
I am not going to go on no QVC.
No.
You save that gig for Hillary. She's going to need those women liking her again.
Fine. But your brand has been on the market for quite a while now.
Look, man, Tony freaking Blair has this $15 million deal with the president of Kazakhstan.
Mm-hmm. We were, as you might recall, very much in the mix on those conversations.
And as I do recall, we were offering me at a lower price.
I think that was one of the strategies we'd suggested as a persuasive lever for the president.
I am not discount merchandise, Adrian. Our customers think they're getting a better deal when they pay more for somebody. You see how much Colin Powell's believability has gone up since he raised his price for speeches?
You are, and I say this with the utmost respect, sir, What I consider one of our prime legacy properties, and that means we have the privilege of being more selective not only of what we accept, but in what we're being offered.
Man, you're talking about me like I'm an old-timer. I played sax on the Arsenio show, for God's sake.
Mm-hmm. That's on slide 10. Unfortunately, many of the buyers out there now in the International X official marketplace just happen to have never heard of Arsenio.
He's coming back, you know.
Well, maybe they'll have heard of him then.
Wow. Well, sir, this is the day I need to remember for my next memoir.
Well, Mr. President, in all honesty, I don't
think... No, Adrian, this is a true pivot point. After all this time, this may be the day I stop thinking about tomorrow.
Middle-aged angst and youthful ambition, together they add up to Clinton something, the wilderness years.
From New Orleans, this is Le Show, and now, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
The Italian distributor of 12 Years a Slave has apologized for posters that placed the focus on Brad Pitt and Michael Fassbender at the expense of star, I'm going to mispronounce the name, Chiwetel Ejiofor. Sorry about that. There is no pronunciation guide listed with this. We apologize for creating and releasing unauthorized posters for 12 Years a Slave in Italy featuring Brad Pitt and Michael Fassbender in a manner inconsistent with approved advertising materials, said BIM Distribuzione. All inappropriate materials have now been withdrawn. We are very proud of the film and regret any distraction this incident may have caused. The apology came 3 days after the first news of the posters emerged. Pitt, who produced the film, has a minor role in 12 Years a Slave. Fassbender is in a supporting role. Both are white, while black actor Ejiofor appears in virtually every scene in the film. The head of Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula, in a video message last Sunday, apologized for a hospital attack in Sana'a, Yemen, earlier this month that left dozens of people dead. The attackers were directed not to assault the hospital or mosque in an attack against a Yemeni Ministry of Defense compound, but one fighter made a mistake and attacked the hospital, according to Al-Qaeda leader Qasim al-Raimi in the video. We confess to this mistake and fault. We offer our apologies and condolences to the families of the victims, Raimi said in the video. We did not want your lost ones. We did not target them on purpose. This is not the religion. This is not of our religion or our morals. Unquote. The apology comes after Yemeni government officials released surveillance video showing the hospital under attack. It showed patients nervously looking out of hospital windows, then running after an explosion. This apology, though rare, isn't the first time Al-Qaeda or its affiliates have apologized. In November, Syrian rebels with Al-Qaeda ties apologized for mistakenly beheading a wounded rebel fighter after assuming he supported President Bashar al-Assad. And in 2009, an Al-Qaeda spokesman released a video message offering condolences to unintended Muslim victims killed in several attacks. Cracker Barrel has apologized to its customers after pulling Duck Dynasty merchandise off its shelves. The restaurant chain decided to stop selling certain Duck Dynasty branded products after Phil Robertson of the program made controversial comments about gay people and black people in an interview with GQ magazine. We continue to offer other duck products in our stores, said the original statement. We removed selected products which we were convinced might offend some of our guests while we evaluate the situation. But Cracker Barrel's executives backpedaled less than 48 hours later after customers berated the company for the decision. Dear Cracker Barrel customer, the company wrote, when we made the decision to remove and reevaluate certain Duck Dynasty items, we offended many of our loyal customers. Our intent was to avoid offending, but that's just what we've done. You told us we made a mistake, and you weren't shy about it. We listened. Today, we're putting all our Duck Dynasty products back in our stores, and we apologize to you. And we apologize for offending you. We sincerely hope you'll continue to be a part of our Cracker Barrel family. It's a family. The communications director, fired over a tweet evoking AIDS and race that was sent as she was headed to Africa, has apologized, saying she's ashamed for her insensitivity to the millions of people living with the virus. Justine Sacco, formerly a PR executive for the internet giant IAC, which owns Match.com and Vimeo, was fired over a tweet that came from her account that read, quote, going to Africa, hope I don't get AIDS, just kidding, I'm white, unquote. Controversy erupted while Sacco was reportedly mid-flight with no internet access. When she landed, she said, my greatest concern was this statement reached South Africa first. After sending her statement to the South African newspaper, the Star, Sacco shared the following apology. Quote, words cannot express how sorry I am and how necessary it is for me to apologize to the people of South Africa whom I have offended due to a needless and careless tweet. There is an AIDS crisis taking place in the country that we read about in America but do not live with or face on a continuing basis. It is terribly easy to be cavalier about an epidemic that one has never witnessed firsthand. For being insensitive to this crisis, which does not discriminate by race, gender, or sexual orientation, and to the millions of people living with the virus, I am ashamed. This is my father's country, and I was born here. I'm very sorry for the pain I caused. IAC distanced itself from the tweet in a statement and said she has been fired. A Chinese express delivery company apologized on Saturday after parcels tainted by toxic chemicals killed one recipient and caused seven others to become ill. A man in East China's Shandong province died of methyl fluoroacetate poisoning after he accepted shoes delivered by Shanghai YTO Express. The Bureau of the Post Office said four parcels delivered by the Shanghai-based company were found to be contaminated. Five delivery workers and two recipients were also poisoned. The package containing the chemical leaked during transport, said a spokesman for the express company. The package was sent by a chemical plant in central China's Hubei province, who claimed it was innoxious. The company said it would not shun its responsibilities and was cooperating with police in the investigation. But there are apologies for not delivering packages, too. And I'll find them. Or maybe I won't. Yes, here they are right here. Nordstrom has profusely apologized to customers who didn't receive packages in time for Christmas, and Amazon.com offered a $20 gift card to customers inconvenienced by UPS's inability to deliver packages in time for the holidays. I sincerely apologize for letting you down. We also realize we're accountable for meeting your expectations and take responsibility for what happened here, wrote Jamie Nordstrom, president of Nordstrom's online operation. Yes, there's a Nordstrom at Nordstrom's. Two students, part of an atheist society at the London School of Economics, were issued an apology from the university after being asked to cover up pictures on their T-shirts depicting the prophets Jesus and Muhammad. They were manning an atheist booth at the London School of Economics Freshman's Fair when they were asked to cover up their T-shirts, which used pictures from the satirical comic strip Jesus and Mo. Two students formally appealed to the school and have now received a public apology from the London School of Economics director Craig Calhoun. He said staff had faced difficulties in dealing with the situation. He said in hindsight, the T-shirts did not amount to harassment, nor did they violate any LSE policies. The apology comes amid concerns that universities in the UK are pandering to Muslims. Dave Martin has apologized after making a joke that he later conceded was highly inappropriate. He was engaging with fans on Twitter and asked them to submit questions about grammar. When one asked, "Is this how you spell lasonia, L-A-S-O-N-I-A? He replied, "It depends. Are you in an African-American neighborhood or in an Italian restaurant?" He quickly realized his joke could have been viewed as offensive and deleted it. He apologized and later shared a fuller explanation online. And Los Angeles Lakers coach Mike D'Antoni, after an embarrassing loss against the Phoenix Suns, the team he previously coached, said fans who were feeling down about the team should, quote, find another team to root for. He quickly realized he'd lost his emotional control and apologized. He said, "I was an idiot last night. I was out of my mind. I was ticked off. We didn't play well, and I said some stuff I shouldn't have. It was stupid. That's me. I just made a mistake." Unquote, Mike D'Antoni. Because, you know, they don't have Kobe anymore, so who's going to hog the ball? The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Moving swiftly along, one of the major issues this year was what to do about the ongoing struggle in Syria. President Obama had said there was a red line that Syria should not cross that involved the use of chemical weapons. There was a report that chemical weapons were used this year, and much controversy about whether there was proof that it was the Syrian government who had used the chemical weapons. And then there was the question of what do you do if a red line is crossed? And President Obama then said, "It wasn't my red line."
I'm the prez, and when I lead, you know, you've been led fine. You probably heard someone say I drew a red line. It was a headline. They were up against a deadline. But it makes as much sense as saying I'm standing in a bread line. I'm far from broke. My financial state is oak, and getting ochre. The bank sent me a broker. We'll be well fed, and that line is surely red, but it's not mine. It's an international line, and it's not my credibility that's at stake. That's an error you could make, a lackadaisical mistake, but my cred's prime. If you missed the bolt I hurled, that line belongs to Congress and the world. And in case behavior threatens to get worse, that red line belongs to the universe. Violating norms is what it bars. And it's not my line. You can trace it straight back to Mars. There's no way it's my red line. I was sailing through the back nine. And like all lines in the sand, sands will shift and lines will slide. And lines look different when you see them from the inside.
I'm John from Arizona. I'm sort of a loner. Used to be Mr. Straight Talk, now I'm Mr. Don't Wait Talk. I was tortured in a war. In fact, my shoulders are still sore. But I think bombing's just a bore. We need lots more. Change the regime, end the Beguine. Keep redrawing that old map. Anything less is Democrat crap. I met the rebels. They had cotton, I had coffee. I used to hang out with Gaddafi till the tables turned. If you play with fire, you get burned, unless your bunker's lead-lined. But look, it's not my red line. There's no way it's my red line. I was in the Meet the Press green room at 9. And like all lines in the sand, sands will shift and lines will slide. And lines look different when you see them from the inside.
I'm a different John. In Vietnam, I was in it. Then I testified to the Senate. Said you don't want to be the last American to die for a mistake. That was my big break. Now I'm Secretary of State. When I testify these days, a lot more is at stake. Some say I lied when I testified that the rebels aren't Al-Qaeda. But I'm not a fact provider. My job is to add moral weight. When you take over at state, you're not captain of your fate. I'll make the case and save my face. It's the younger me who would have chosen to resign, but it's not my red line. There's no way it's my red line. I was windsailing the whole time. Like all lines in the sand, sands will shift, and lines will slide, and lines look different when you see them from the inside.
It's international norms we're protecting, no matter what you're suspecting.
This is nothing like Iraq, where the backstory was rife with ancient ethnic strife.
This time we're not sticking around. No boots on the ground. Just some in the air. As precise as my hair.
We're only there to show we have some spine.
But it's not my red line.
And then as a surprise solution to the quandary of what to do about a red line that nobody wanted to take credit for, but that yet was violated, in step Russian President Putin with a solution. And over to Moscow for a meeting with the Russian Foreign Minister Lavrov went Secretary of State Kerry to seal that deal. But before he went, he stopped in for some timely advice.
2013, the year in rebuke.
Mr. Secretary, thank you for coming in this morning. I can't tell you what this means to me.
You're right. I've heard your recent speeches.
Well, you certainly know this office as well as any person alive.
Yes, it was the office of my rival when I was National Security Advisor, and he was Secretary of State.
Mm-hmm. That would be Bill Rogers.
You are free to speak his name. And then it was my office when I climbed over the lifeless corpse of his career.
Mm-hmm. Can I offer you a beverage of your choice?
It's before noon, isn't it?
Yes, sir. My plane takes off.
Well, then it won't be the beverage of my choice. I'll have some water.
Yeah. Well, we've got some fine State Department spring water right here for you.
Thank you.
There you go. I have to say on a personal note, when I was a soldier just back from Vietnam and I threw my ribbons or my medals over the Capitol fence,
I never dreamed that I'd be sitting here pouring you water today.
Well, of course, back in those days, my boss wanted you arrested and charged with something akin to treason, so I never dreamed you'd be sitting in my old chair.
We actually replaced the chair.
Well, it's been a while. I did have Christian on my staff prepare these for you.
These would be...
your medals. Now that you're defending unilateral American military action contrary to what's laughingly referred to as international law, you deserve them.
Well, thank you, Mr. Secretary. I'm so very close to being moved. Now, obviously, sir, I reached out to you because I have some meetings coming up with Foreign Minister Lavrov.
Well, you don't have to reach out. I'm sitting right here.
No, of course. And I thought you might have some thoughts on dealing with Russian, or in your case, Soviet foreign ministers, or either, or both.
Well, of course, the Russians, and before them the Soviets, and before them the Russians, take a very geopolitically focused view of the world. They see Syria, very close to some of their former republics, as part of their axis of influence. So they will be far more responsive if that point of view is acknowledged.
Yes, sir. If I may, that seems almost obvious.
If I may, listening to your recent speeches, I thought that those of the obvious might be in order. So, to take a concrete example, when we engineered the coup that ousted Allende in Chile, the Soviets and their friends made a lot of noise about him being democratically elected and so forth. But basically, that was our sphere, and they acknowledged that.
So you're saying that Lavrov and Putin are expecting us to make a lot of noise about Syria, but not do much of anything?
I think we're all expecting that, Mr. Secretary.
Allende actually was democratically elected, though, wasn't he?
So was the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt.
We didn't overthrow them, though.
You didn't have to. Anyway, foreign policy is a lot like playing a game of chicken on the highway. The first player who takes his hands off the steering wheel has the advantage.
Well, but of course now we're playing that game with a huge domestic and worldwide audience.
That was Nixon's great talent. He didn't like Jews and he was a bit of a drinker, but he didn't care what people thought, so he could feel free to take his hands off the steering wheel first. And he did, over and over again. Of course, I had to tell him when to do it, but...
Again, sir, all due respect.
At my age, I need you to get to the point more than I need the respect.
Fine. We've just been through two wars started by a foreign policy team that didn't just take their hands off the steering wheel. They nailed the accelerator to the floor and threw the brake pedal out the window. I don't think in a world dominated by social media that transcends borders, a world leader can operate that way, with all due respect, Mr. Secretary. I think a leader has to demonstrate some degree of concern for world opinion.
Oh, don't tell me, Mr. Secretary. Tell Bashar al-Assad. Look, when I entered the White House, the Chinese were viewed as a grave threat to the free world.
Partly thanks to your old boss.
Sure. But 10 years after the old man left office in supposed disgrace, I had consulting contracts with the Chinese worth $20 million. That's the magic of smart diplomacy.
So you're saying...
I'm saying that if you play your cards right, you can end up with a multi-million dollar consulting contract in Syria. I mean, if not you, who? Lavrov? Look, your president clearly doesn't want to be in another war.
Well, he ran to end wars, not...
I know, and my president had a secret plan to end war. More importantly, your president has a Congress that won't let him get into a war he doesn't want to be in. Mr. Putin has generously offered to humiliate him by getting him out of his own jam. I suggest you find a way to let him. Then you'll really have earned those medals.
I appreciate the time, Dr. Kissinger. If this works out, maybe both you and my president will have earned your peace prizes.
We both should live so long.
And finally, PolitiFact call this the lie of the year.
you like the way you look, and you like the cut of my jib, if nothing's changed in the last 4 years, if you can still eat without needing a bib, if you like New York in June, and if you like your current health plan, it's no lie, no wish on the moon. Mm-mm. You can keep it.
You can keep it.
You know, if you like the White House Facebook page, if you like movies and walks on the beach, if your insurance plan is robust enough, with the current premiums almost within reach, if you don't know art, but you know what you like, and if you like your current health plan, it's no joke, no called third strike. Mm-mm. You can keep it. You know, if you like me, or if you're just like me, if you like buying health insurance on your own, if you like the good things in life and spending days online and on the phone, if your insurance company still likes you and you like your current health plan, it's no jive, and I'm certainly not the man. You can keep it.
Had to truncate the last verse for you, ladies and gentlemen, because we're out of time, plumb out of time, for this week's edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations, NPR worldwide, throughout Europe, the USAN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, 7.490 megahertz shortwave, around the world via the internet at two different locations, live and archive whenever you want at harryshearer.com and kcsn.org, on the mighty 104 in Berlin, available for your smartphone through stitcher.com, and is available as a free podcast from WWNO.org, SoundCloud, and several others, too vague to mention at this moment. And it'll be just like 2014, coming right up, if you'd agree to join with me then. Would you already? Thank you very much. Tip of the show, chapeau to the San Diego, Pittsburgh, Chicago, and Exile and Hawaii desks. Thanks, as always, to Pam Halstead. Thanks to Jenny Lawson here at WWNO New Orleans for help with today's broadcast. Playlist of what you hear on this program of always available at harryshearer.com, where everything in the store is still $5. And I'll be yakking at you 140 characters at a time at The Harry Shearer on Twitter. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of WWNO New Orleans, flagship station of the Change is Easy Radio Network. Happy New Year.